Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers and YouTube, iTunes, iHeartRadio, everywhere you listen to us. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and as always, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Hello, good afternoon.
And you're as excited as I've seen you in a long time.
I'm all smiles. This is a lovely guest. I enjoyed the last time we had him on the show, and I'm happy to have him on the show again.
Well, he doesn't remember it, but if you know who this guest is, you'll see why. He actually was a little late because apparently he was a little too chill and relaxed, if you know what I mean. But he's one of our favorites, you know, one of my comedy heroes, and it's such an honor to talk to him again, Tommy Chong.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
Although, according to Zoom, you're Thomas Chong.
Yeah, who are you again?
I'm Dark Mark.
Dark Mark.
Let me go to the intro again. Dark Mark, the goth comedian. And
I thought you were darker, Mark.
A lot of people say that. I did a show at not too long ago, and Sean Wayans followed me, and he's like, "I'm darker, Mark." I'm like, "Okay, great, okay, whatever." actually, it wasn't Sean Wayans, somebody else, but. No, it was our guest last week, Brandon Black, said I'm darker Brandon. So, but Tommy, it's always great to see you. And, you know, if people don't know who you are, you better get that Google working, because everybody knows who you are.
Yeah,
and everybody likes. In a society where we're encouraged to hustle harder, sleep less, and work more, you may find it difficult to relax and be in the moment. Performance issues in the bedroom affect millions of men just like you and I. And finally, there's a discreet tool that works. Meet Eddie, the smarter treatment for erectile dysfunction. Eddie is a clinically proven, easy-to-use wearable device designed to help men of any age strengthen and maintain their erections. Call 737-301-6111. That's 737-301-6111 to speak to a licensed nurse. Or visit eddiebygiddy.com, eddiebygiddy.com, and be the best version of yourself. Eddiebygiddy.com, where innovation meets ED, and we have a special discount for you. If you use our code DARKMARK20 in checkout, you get 20% off your order. Be the best version of yourself. Try eddiebygiddy.com and use our code DARKMARK20 and get 20% off. And you'll be happy. Your partner will be happy.
Oh, yeah.
Except maybe Cheech. But everybody likes you, regardless of age,
economics, they like me. Race. They like me more than Cheech.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Now, I wanted to start off with this because,
except my wife. Except my wife. She liked Cheech.
Your wife likes Cheech more than you.
Yeah. That was just to piss me off, so.
Nicole, I'll give you the first question once again, because I know you have lots of questions for Tommy.
Okay. What is the best part of smoking weed? What is the best benefit it brings to your life?
It calms the mind. And when you have a calm mind, I mean, you know, people say, it's forgetting. But it's not forgetting. It is your mind is sort of like it loses its grasp on those things that it hangs on to. Sometimes out of habit, sometimes out of fear. But when get high on THC, your mind relaxes. And when it relaxes, then it sort of like becomes open for other messages and other impulses that were trying to get in, you know, that you had blocked. And like hunger, for instance, you know, you don't realize how hungry you are until you get really high. And then you go, whoa, I'm really hungry, because all your senses, you know, your brain is aware of all your senses, you see. And so what it does, in a way, it clouds the brain, but in a better way, it unclouds the brain.
It removes all the negativity, maybe?
I was going to say, it's kind of like meditation in a way. It's its own form of meditation, right down to the breathing, the in and the out.
Exactly. And that's why, the mystics, the evolved, the gurus, the highly evolved ones, they got total control of their mind. And it's been written in scriptures in the Bible many times that if you keep your mind on God, then he will perfect that which concerns you. Mm. In other words, if you're a writer, then you really write. If you're an artist, you do your art. You're an actor, you act. If you're a singer, you sing. But it helps you perfect your profession, and that's just by having a thought, your thought on God, on the muse, on the higher power, whatever you want to call it, nature, whatever you want to call it, but having a pure thought. Because when you think of God, you're really having a pure thought, because God represents total purity. And so when you have pure thoughts, then it's a big highway for all the good stuff to come pouring in, you see, and that's what pot does.
And if you believe in God, God created marijuana.
Of course, he created everything.
Yeah. So I wanted to clear something up, because last time we interviewed you, I really went into the breakup of Cheech and Chong, because I was very curious how that happened and why it happened. And after the show, Nicole's like, it's such a shame they never got back together. But you did. How did that happen?
We got back together, I guess, 05. 04, 05. We got back together before. We were supposed to do a movie before I went to jail. But really? Because I went to jail, that sort of stopped that. And then while I was in prison, Cheech came out a couple of times to write the so-called movie we were going to do when I got out. But when I got out, I didn't like what was written, and so that fell apart. And then we more or less broke up. But then after I got out, Cheech wasn't acting, there was no jobs or whatever. And so we had a meeting to see if we could get back together again. But the meeting didn't go so well. But even though I hadn't seen him for a long time, and so I texted him. I said, even though, we're not getting back together, it was nice seeing you. Well, my son intercepted my email, because my son kind of has control over my computer, because he showed me how to do it, and he made right. sure that he had control. So he, he erased my email and put his own email in there, where he says, I'm really glad that we're getting back together again, and that we should be rehearsing and blah, blah, blah. And then he told me after, my son told me after what he did, because Cheech was on his way over for the rehearsal. And we had a, wasn't much of a rehearsal. It was like, hey, okay, looks like we're doing this again. That was it. We're back together.
I remember hearing about it. And like I say, it was, when you guys officially announced you were back together, it was after you were in jail. It was like, it was like a big rock band getting back together. To me, it was amazing. Yeah. It was 20 years.
It was. Yeah. Yeah. We'd been apart that long. And then then we got back and we worked right up until the pandemic,
And so what's your relationship with Cheech like now?
He's still a Mexican, I can't get past that, but I will eventually,
You don't say.
It's pretty good. He's got his own art gallery now, so.
Right.
So I'll be, if it ever opens, he's postponed the opening about 5 times now.
Well, because of the pandemic, though, right?
Well, I know it's a Mexican opening, too,
Oh, one of those. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Well, Tommy, this is actually a good segue. Let me show you this because I want to make sure I get the name right. As I said, everybody's been going crazy because we're having you back on. Kareem John sent this. I'm going to share my screen, and I hope you can see this. Give me just a second. And hold on. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, Kareem John. Let me exit. Oh, sorry.
Nice.
Yeah, he did a picture of you and Cheech Chong.
Very nice.
And I will, if you'd like, I could send that to your son, and so you have a copy.
I'd love one. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. And it just goes to show you. I mean, you've inspired all sorts of arts.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. We're NFT'd too. You know.
You got Cheech Chong NFTs now?
Well, it's homies. The homies they're called, and they're Cheech and Chong homies. And they're on the market.
You know, remember homies, Nicole?
I remember homies. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Cheech and Chong homies and NFTs. That sounds great.
Yep. Yeah. It's being sold, and we sold out the first round, and now they're looking to keep making more money. So it's doing good. You know.
Great. I do have to ask you, because like I said, I want to give Cheech his due. What is it about Cheech that made you funnier?
No, Cheech is probably funnier. Depends on the bit, you know. Depends on the bit.
You guys are so much funny. I mean, you're both funny guys, but together there's just magic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, we're perfect together. We always were. He just got tired of me fucking with him, you know. Because that's all I did though. Every movie you see, it was amazing. But then he evolved actually, and mm-hmm. he evolved into a fine actor, you know, very fine, you know, and a cop, you know, with Nash Bridges. He played right. a very credible cop. Yeah, very entertaining, you know. He that's what he wanted to do. His dad really was a cop, and Cheech, you know, like dads and sons, you know, Cheech was very proud to be able to follow in his footsteps, even if it was just on television, but especially because it was on television.
Right.
Because Cheech really, personified that whole profession, you know, and it was such a, you know, I don't know how Oscar, the dad, felt about it, but I'm quite sure, you know, Oscar, deep down inside, was, well, that's my boy, you know.
It's amazing who gets to play cops. So you got Cheech, you got Ice-T, you got all these, like, notorious people, and now they're playing cops.
Yeah, yeah, because there's no difference. Just there's just a line, and you're either on one side or the other. That's all, you know.
Right.
Just like prison. I heard they cut the girl and the guy that escaped, you know, from Alabama or whatever it was. But I understand totally, you know, her falling in love with the guy, because when I was in jail, you know, the guards were doing just as hard time as the prisoners, you know, and we were just one big family. It was just that one had a uniform and another had a different kind of uniform.
Yeah. Now, did you get love letters in prison? I don't want. Ooh, I know you're married to the lovely Shelby, but
not love letters. I got fan mail, which I kept, and I intend to do an art project where I'm going to feature the letters somehow, you know, in the project.
There wasn't one woman that's like, hey, I'll bust you out. And,
more than that kind of thing. Well, with the prison I was in, you could walk away if you wanted to.
Right.
You know? Especially on the weekends, you know. If you can get by the count, you could be gone for the weekend and come back, and they wouldn't know about it.
You know who Tommy Selma was, Nicole?
No.
The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, yes. I do remember that. We discussed that last time. Jordan
right. Belfort. Right. And he, the reason that there's a book and a movie is because of Tommy Chong.
Well, because I helped
Tommy.
Him.
I remember.
I gave him some good advice and he took it. And because he's a brilliant genius, what I told him rang true, and he proved it. He proved it, my theory. And
there were tennis courts on the, at the prison?
Yeah, they had tennis courts, and Jordan would play every day.
The least he could have done was put you in the movie.
What's that?
I said the least he could have done is put you in the movie. Like he.
It wasn't up to him. He would have, you know.
But and he'd work with Scorsese.
Yeah, it was more up to Scorsese, but they didn't need me in the movie for sure. You know, that was such a good movie.
Oh, it was a great movie. It's an amazing
movie. Oh, my God. And the people, the way they cast, the girl, the wife, and all. Oh, incredible.
And I have to ask you as an expert, the depiction of Ludes, is that accurate?
Well, you know, that was one of the reasons that he clicked with me, because I told him, when I was teaching him how to write, I said, you got to write the most of, you know, so if you get high, you got higher than anybody ever on the planet got high. And
even Tommy Chong.
Oh, especially Tommy Chong, you know, because I could never, I mean, with me, when I got high, I just don't move, you know, I go nowhere. I stay where I'm at. But Jordan, you know, he told me a lot of those stories, and then he embellished on them. Mm-hmm. And then you got DiCaprio, when it was such a genius, you know, make it even more bigger, you know. So that's why that movie worked, because it was big. It was a big movie.
Right. But have you ever been... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, is there a creative project you haven't done yet that you'd like to do? Like something, you've had such a big career, but is there anything left that you haven't like done yet that you always wanted to do?
Yeah, I wanted, and I'm going to do this. I wanted to be head of a movie studio, like a mogul.
Amazing.
And I'm going to be. I'm putting a movie company together called Peace Pipe Pictures, and I'm going to be the mogul. And we're going to have a budget of about $1 trillion. Because I'm going to write movies, produce movies that will cure the homeless situation, will help the immigrants at the border big time, help America, give people health coverage from the get-go, schooling, all that good stuff that we need to create a society that will sustain itself, you know. Not get away totally, but redirect the greed impulses. And so instead of hoarding, you're sharing and you're purchasing, but you're also dealing. And everything that needs to move the civilization along, because we're only here really for one reason, and that's to repopulate the planet, you see. In other words, that's the most fun of being a human, is being able to repopulate, you know. And then as you repopulate, you have to have caretakers for every age of the infant as it grows into adulthood. And then that cycle continues. And the reason we have wars is so that we can develop character. See, you can't develop character when everything's going really well. The way you develop character is that you put the character to a test. And the harder the test, the greater the character. And of course, not everybody becomes at the top of the class, but that's what we're striving for. That's why we have conflict. And because we live in a very physical universe. And the law of the physical universe is basically conflict, you know. And the opposite of a physical universe is a spiritual universe. And so check this out. What's the opposite of everything?
Nothing.
That's right. That's how big the spiritual universe is. It's so small, it really disappears. It's too small to even imagine. And the reason is that a physical universe has everything. It has light, it has oxygen, it has hydrogen, it has chemicals, everything. A spiritual universe only has a feeling, and that feeling is love, because love is knowledge. And so in the spiritual universe, you have all the knowledge there is in the entire physical universe, and it's all in the spiritual universe. But in order to gain, understand what that knowledge is, you have to have a being in the physical universe to learn everything you need to learn. And as we evolve, we learn more and more and more. And eventually, like the Bible says, we all become gods.
Hey, man, you're blowing my mind. I really should have smoked a joint before the show.
Isn't that a trip?
That's so deep.
I think your ambition and your plan is amazing, and I think it's great for you to give back to the world on such a massive level. So bravo.
Oh, not only give back, but create a project that self-sustains.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're producing humans, really beautiful, good humans, out of this thing. You got actors, you got writers, you got creators, you got artists, you got the best of everybody, and they're all working toward the same goal, which is to create a planet that is so livable that there's no need for conflict.
Hopefully, we get there. If I had trillions of dollars, I'd give it to you.
No, I don't need it. But what you can do eventually, one of the ways I will be raising funds will be adoption. I'm starting a Tommy Chong, join the Tommy Chong family. Okay. And all you have to do is fill out a form and send in a fee, and then you get on the family newsletter.
Okay.
And whatever events comes up is all announced, and we have family get-togethers on every major holiday, especially on my birthday, May 24th, and we're going to do a celebration. You know, May 24th used to be Queen Victoria's birthday, and they used to celebrate it
I'm sure it technically still is.
Well, it is, but they used to celebrate it with fireworks. Mm-hmm. All over the Commonwealth, all over Australia, Canada, you know, the Great Britain. And so when I was 7, 8 years old, when I realized I was born on the same day, whenever we'd have fire on my birthday, they'd have the fireworks, I would pretend it was all for me. It was, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
So we're going to have fireworks for your birthday this year?
Oh, big time. Not me, but I mean, eventually we will evolve to that. When I used to do fireworks, we'd light a sparkler and run around. That was the extent of it. Because I was too freaked out about explosives and the firecrackers. And I was never one for getting an eye put out or having a finger blown off, you know.
Well, everybody be sparking one up for your birthday. I want to wish you a happy early birthday. Funny you should mention that, because my friend Kevin's birthday is this month, and I was on your website and I saw that you sell Tommy Chong special birthday candles.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to get those for him.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah.
Yeah, they have rolling paper, and I believe. And yeah. And they're available on Amazon. So they called? I forget what they're called, but they're.
I saw them. I have them. But I can't remember what they knew anything about.
But it's great. So they get four of them and they got rolling papers. It's great. But speaking of creating beautiful human beings, I mean, your children, Radon Chong, yes. Robbie Chong, yes. Very successful actors. Marcus Chong is a very successful actor. Was in the Matrix.
Yep.
You didn't technically create him, but he's your son. And
he adopted me. He was actually the first Chong to adopt me rather than me adopt him. And
how did that happen?
Well, he just took my name and told everybody that I was his dad. And I didn't argue about it. Yeah, it's okay. I'll go for that. And it worked for a while, you know. But I don't mind. He is a hell of an actor, and like you said.
So wait, so he isn't really your adopted son, or
no?
Oh, no, really? Not I didn't know that.
Not official. No, Nicole, like I said, he adopted me. I've known his mother since she was 3 years old, June, and the brother.
So you're a family friend.
Oh, family, way back. June was. Yeah, she's an old dear friend, and then she hooked up with Marcus's father. He's a television reporter in Seattle, a very cool guy, and they had Marcus, but right. Marcos, when he said that he was my son, he got more action, you know. And so I said, "I'll go for it, man." You know,
Nicole and fans, if you're not familiar. You remember the pilot of the Nebuchadnezzar in the first Matrix?
Yes.
And then in the sequels, they had somebody else doing that. That's Marcus Chong.
Oh. Yep.
And on Wikipedia and every reference site, it says that Tommy adopted him, but now we get the real story. You love him as a family friend, but you didn't adopt
him. No, he adopted me. And that's fine. And that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm going to give everybody a chance to adopt me.
I will be Dark Mark Chung very soon. To adopt me. Sorry, mom and dad.
Yeah, you know what? I'll give everybody a Chinese name because that's what makes you an individual. See, when you have your own Chinese name, like I do, Chiang Hong is my Chinese name. When I tell that to a scholar that knows how to write it, they write out my name and then they tell me the history. See, my name has history. It goes all the way back to the beginning of the families, all the Chinese families. And like I'm in the same family as Chiang Kai-shek. And
really?
As far as I can remember, a long time ago. But yeah, and so when I adopt you, I'm going to figure out a way to give everybody gets a Chinese name.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
But when your daughter, Ray Dawn, became such a big star in the 80s, how proud were you? And speaking of beautiful children, what a beautiful woman she is.
Can you imagine? Well, you know what happened with Ray Dawn? She was about 14, I believe, somewhere around there, maybe even younger. Anyway, she said, "Dad, I want a scooter." You know, I said, "Well, then, Ray Dawn, get a job." Because, you know, that was Cheech and I just barely started making it. You know, we're still, you know, living, you know, very, very frugally, as you might say. And so Ray Dawn went and got a job. It was a $10,000 McDonald's commercial.
Oh, wow.
Just like that. Boom. And she never turned her back. And she never got that scooter, by the way.
No, I was going to say, she can get a really good scooter for $10,000.
But you know what? I got a scooter when I retired from when they quit the 70s show, when they wrapped it. And now Ray Dawn has it. I gave it to Ray Dawn.
You finally earned that scooter.
So she has a scooter. It goes with her. She also has a camper. And so she's got a scooter and a camper. And she's happening.
Well, let her know we're big fans because
I will.
And my friends were like, came across something about her on the internet. Like, wow, wait, Ray Dawn Chong, what happened to her? I'm like, I don't know. But she, and we came across her Instagram, and she's apparently she's doing great. So,
no, she's working away. You know, she's a worker.
That's that apparently because you told her she couldn't get a scooter. That's why.
Get a job. And you know that was the only one I'd said that to. I didn't have to the other ones.
Right.
You know, but I wanted them first to get an education. But if they couldn't get an education, they get a job. You know.
Sure.
Yeah. Do something. You know, do something to make some money, you know, and to help people. That's all.
Exactly.
That's all. I don't care what it is, you know.
And I see that Ray Dawn has been doing that. Looking at her Instagram page, she's doing a lot of community work and a lot of social work, causes. Now, speaking of being broke, which I clearly am, if you see my apartment. But I was reading, and I was very surprised at this. That when you guys did Up and Smoke, you basically, you had made some money with the records, a lot of money. I'm sure the record company made a lot more. And you basically pulled all of that and were, it was hard paying the rent until the movie came out. Is that true?
Well, we had done, because we quit touring to do the movie. And that was where, that was our big income, those tours. You know, we were making big bucks just for one night. And we had to stop that for the movie. And then when the movie came out, we never really got paid, you know. And then I got sued. It was quite a trip, but it all worked out well because you know it always does.
And well, what did you get sued for?
Because I had a loan. I took out halfway. When we started the movie, I'd moved from Malibu to Bel Air. And so my Bel Air house was under construction.
Mm-hmm.
But we stopped touring to do the movie. And so I stopped having income to pay for the construction. And so I went to Lou and I told Lou I needed some bucks. And well, so Lou arranged, that. You know, arranged for me to get $100,000. Well, the way he got, it's a long story, but anyway, the way he got the $100,000 came up in court because it wasn't from Lou, it was from another account that the accountant was in charge of. And so if that loan got defaulted, which was getting defaulted, then the accountant would be out the 100 G's. So the accountant sued me. Well, when the accountant sued me, then that the thing called discovery.
Mm-hmm.
Then we found out where the money for making of at least the last part of Up in Smoke, where it came from. And there was a lot of surprises, a lot of raised eyebrows, a lot of a little bit of discussion, and then a nice settlement. And that was the end of the Cheech and Chong and Lou Adler enterprise.
Right.
And then we met Howard Brown, and Howard got us lawyers and got us really on the right track. And then everything after that, everything was fine.
And after that, the movies were C&C Brown Productions.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right.
I've seen your movies once or twice.
I see that. But you notice Shelby's a producer on a few of them.
Yes, you know? No, I did. And Up in Smoke then became like one of the biggest hits of the year. It was the second highest grossing comedy besides Animal House and made $100 million, which today would be what, $300 million?
The way gas prices are, more like $600 million.
Sure. Sure. And, so you're vindicated, but not, I mean, you were vindicated, you're out of debt, but not exactly rolling in dough.
No, the thing is, my whole life has never been about money. Had it been, I wouldn't be where I am today because, you know, I had a chance from the beginning, you know, to stay and become a mogul, you know, and I went for the excitement, you know, the gig. You know, the learning. I wanted to try this and try that. And, you know, it was great. You know? Like, everything I became first, and then I realized who I was. And then I sort of dwelt on that, enjoyed it, then moved on.
Because now you're going to be a mogul.
When Cheech and I broke up, it was kind of weird, you know, because what happened, he got offered a movie without me,
right?
And the whole thing was that it's going to be a Cheech movie or a Richard Marin movie, and then he come up and told me that he was doing a movie without me, period. And so I said, well, then basically fuck you, see you later.
Oh, wow.
You know, and
born in East LA.
Yeah, that was born in East LA.
Well, let me ask you a question. I didn't ask you this last time. Born in East LA, even though you had nothing to do with it, is still credited to Cheech and Chong because it's on the Cheech and Chong album, Get Out of My Room, which you did things on other songs, but not that one, in skits. Did you get any royalties from that?
The thing is, like, like Up in Smoke. I wrote Up in Smoke, but then right. Cheech and I shared it, you know. I wrote the lyrics in the most of the Basketball Jones, you know. Right. Eric Mayai wrote most of the lyrics. Mm-hmm. Gator Lorem wrote the music.
Right.
Cheech got a half of everything, you see. It was always Cheech and Chong. And that was the deal. Well, but when it came to Born in East L.A., it was a song from Bruce Springsteen. Right. And Cheech wrote the whole thing by himself. Only problem was, in a way it was a problem, and then in a way it was a solution. He did not include me, period,
mm-hmm.
on that song.
Right.
But yet it was under the Cheech and Chong to sell it thing, right. you know. Like so he never way, said.
Sorry about starting Sedanko over there, but go ahead.
So he said, like Cheech never, because it was a remake of a Bruce Springsteen song.
Right.
See? And so it was really Bruce's song and Cheech doing it solo. But when Cheech wrote it, he never wrote any parts in for me except the cop part. You see? I really took offense to it because everything we had done, Cheech was always the star, you know? And he was like the lead singer, the star, the lead guy. And so, but it was me that was directing the whole, the everything. But when it became Cheech's turn, Cheech would never knew how to write me in anything. We did a video one time, Get Out of My Room.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, Get Out of My Room. I wrote the lyrics and the song, you know, shared it with Cheech and Chong.
Get out of my room and leave me alone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have to grow up. I'm already grown. Yeah. Well, Cheech wanted to do a video. I wasn't in the video. I consider myself a movie maker, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I did not. I wasn't ready to do a video, you know, especially with Cheech and Chong, you know. In fact, I didn't even want to do a concert movie because once you do movies, you've got to stay in that movie world, you know. You do, and we did. You know, but I was still trying. I always wanted to stay, you know, with the A crowd.
Right.
But it never happened. And so Cheech wrote the I said, you do the video. And he said, I will. Again, he never wrote any part for me. Everything was Cheech.
Right. Yeah. And my question is, do you get royalties from that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Get Out of My Room. We just got a nice check. Yeah, we hadn't got a check for years.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, we get a nice little chunk for Get Out of My Room. Yeah, it was nice surprise. Yeah. I mean, we're getting checks, you know, still from Up in Smoke, and still smoking all those. I mean, I don't know how many years they've been out, but every year, you know, we get a nice little bundle. You know?
Well, people keep discovering them. I remember when I was a kid and my friend had the Get Out of My Room album, and we used to listen and laugh at that all the time. And my mom had Los Cochinos when I was a kid, and I love that. But speaking of Springsteen, Springsteen opened for you guys.
His very first band.
This was before the A Street Band?
Well, you know, up until Springsteen, we used to tell promoters, you know, just get a folk singer to open for us. Because usually the Cheech and Chong crowd hated the folk singer so much. Come on. It was like, oh, they were so glad to see us, you know. And it was tough on the folk singers, but they, a lot of them are immune to it, you know, because that's their want in life, you know, to be right. a folk singer. And so Springsteen was hired. He was going to be the folk singer. But then he put the E Street Band together and he said, oh, opening for Cheech and Chong would be a perfect spot to debut the band. And so I remember them asking, do you mind if Bruce uses a band? He's not a folk singer. We said, no, not at all. No, I didn't hear him. We came late or whatever, but the band had finished. But apparently it was the first time they ever played. And the right. sax player told me that story. Yeah, it was great. We had no idea. Cheech and I, we had no idea. You know, we just come on, do our gig, go home. You know, no idea, no backstory.
You guys never shared a ball or anything like that with Springsteen?
No, I have. No? and the Cheech might. The Cheech chased him around to get the rights for Born in East L.A. and finally nailed him and he got it. You know, Cheech is a bulldog. He doesn't let go. You know, he does it when he wants something. Yeah, like his new art gallery, man. It's going to be incredible.
I can't wait. Yeah, it's good for him. And there's so many questions I have. I have Cheech and Chong overload, but I was gonna say, speaking of smoking bowls with celebrities, now who's, I mean, you've smoked weed with almost everybody, right?
Quite a few.
Is there somebody that I would never suspect that you smoke weed with?
You know, Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah,
the show Wally. Wally,
you smoke weed with Wally?
Tony Dow, yeah. There was George Harrison, Tony Dow, and myself. I remember I lit the joint, I handed it to George Harrison, he took a hit, then he handed it to Tony Dow.
That's Wally. A party.
We were outside at a friend's house. And I looked up Wally, and he gave me that. Yeah, I get that a lot. And he told, yeah, he's a sculptor. You know, he's an artist. Right. He's a cool guy. Very cool guy.
I have a follow up question to that. Is there anyone you haven't smoked weed with that you'd really want to?
I always tell on my bucket list is Paul McCartney, because I've smoked either with or in front of or be around every Beatle except Paul. And Paul was the only pothead, really serious pothead in the group. And he's the only one that I haven't, you know, I was around John, I never spoke with him. I smoked with George, like I said, and Ringo, you know, he's always hanging out somewhere, you know, drying
up. Who hasn't smoked a bowl of Ringo? Come on.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure.
But how is Willie Nelson's weed? How's it like to smoke weed with him?
Willie, you know, we're both up there. Willie's senior to me.
You know? He's still going.
He's an energizer bunny for sure. Willie, I respected Willie's acting in Barbarossa more. Really, I'm into Willie. He's the greatest songwriter and performer ever. You know, I mean, he's our national hero, but his acting in Barbarossa just blew me away. Now, I was really stoned when I saw it, but I love the story and I love Willie's performance. Was just because he played a badass, you know, and I love Willie as a badass. All those guys, Will and Jennings too. You know, he'd be a good badass.
Yeah. I've never seen Barbarossa. I gotta check it out.
Oh, see it! It's a beautiful Gary Busey, you know, sort of younger.
I would imagine you've toked with Gary Busey once or twice.
Not really, you know. But we crossed paths a few times in a TV show and a movie. One time we sort of crossed paths, but he's a little nervous, you know.
And, he needs to smoke more.
No, it's just him. You know, he's such a artist, you know. Well, the Buseys, you know, the whole gang. I mean, they're incredible, you know.
Yeah. He's a great actor, but he seems a little off the wall.
You know who I was with the other day? James Keach.
Okay. You know, Stacy Keach's Keach brother.
Yeah. James and I, he's a grower. He's into growing. And we're talking about, I got a Tommy Chong grow tent. And we're talking about growing weed and, you know, and so we're going to hook up and do a thing. But, I've got a lot of those friends that we should put them in a movie somewhere. You know, they got to be in movies, you know.
Right. Now, let me ask you about Stacy Keach, because I got to be, to me, his performance in Up in Smoke and in Nice Dreams is so great because he plays it perfectly straight. He's not going for the laugh. He's completely serious. He's giving a real performance, and it's great. It's hilarious.
Fucking genius. Well, see, that was lacking in my other movies, is that pro actor. What they do, they have a grasp of the genre, so tightly that they become a movement within a movie. That's why you want them in there. You know, that's why you hire the stars, because they bring this ball of talent, and it just floats through your movie, and it's so magical. And I miss Stacy, those kind of guys, because it's like making a samurai sword. You know, you have to melt the steel so many times and bend it, melt it to get that hard cutting edge. And that's the same as those actors. You know, they've done so many things and they've learned so much of the craft that you get them on camera, and everything, that energy just explodes within that. And that's what you get out of it, you see. And I made the mistake. I lost interest. And there was some weird shit going on between Cheech and I, you know, because he was pissed off that all the movies were like from me. And so I tried to make some concessions, you know, and then when you do that, you know, everybody loses, you know, and that shit didn't work. There were moments, you know, and I'm talking about the other projects. There were good moments, you know, like Still Smoking to me is one of my best, you know. I just.
Great.
Yeah.
But that lard ass scene, it cracked me up every time, because, I mean, you guys are funny, but just to see him just lose his mind is hilarious. You get the two together, it's great.
I'm telling you. You know, every success, you need a failure. Every, you know, political fight, you need an enemy. You know? That's the way of the world. That's the way of the physical world. You need the opposite. And the more opposite you get, the more enjoyable it is. Now you've got a real tennis match. You know, you don't just have one pro just whacking these serves past somebody else. You got someone that's knocking the serve back, and now you got a game, you know. And that's the way it is with acting. You know, you want to get that, and then you want to get it all. You want to get the writer, you want to get the director, you want to get the producer, you know, and the actors and the story, and then you create life.
And to me, if you got a comedian, even a great one like Robin Williams or Bill Murray, it wouldn't be as funny as it is just seeing this guy legitimately just lose his shit. Because you guys are lard ass.
Yeah.
So great.
Yeah. I mean, Stacy being straight was such a genius. And how about Strother Martin, my dad?
Oh, that scene is odd. We quote that scene all the time, the Finkelstein shit kid. I love it.
And listen, think about it. This was all before credits.
Oh, no, that's what's great about Up in Smoke.
It was crazy. It was like a movie and then credits. Wow. And
did he improvise the Finkelstein shit kid? Is that like a bad take?
He improvised every word.
Really?
Every word. He, in fact, we never really had a rehearsal. We just, he looked at the script. Yeah, he figured it out. And me, I had no lines. You know, I just burped in his face, and that's about it. Off. And he just did it, same, man. But there you go. There again, that's the explosion I'm talking about. You give these guys a stage, man, and they'll light it up like they did.
But it's not only veteran actors, though. You discovered a lot of people. I remember when I was a kid, I would watch these movies. Like Pee Wee Herman was in a Cheech and Chong movie, but that's where he got started.
Yeah.
How'd you find him?
Well, I came out of the improvisational acting genre, you know, and so when I started, casting my movie, I wanted to work with improv actors, and that's why Up in Smoke, we had Robert Altman, all of his crew, his people, because Robert Altman was an improv filmmaker. And so the crew and everybody understood improv acting. You know, you shoot the rehearsal, that kind of thing. And we, you know, that's that was I looked at the whole movie industry the way I looked at our act, you know, and I just realized using the best people, they're craftsmen. And I'm talking about the Robert Altman, you know, Lou Lombardo was really, and now Lou Adler was the director, and he was a good director because he listened to everything I told him to say and to do. He did it perfectly. He did it perfectly. So that's the way we directed, because I couldn't, I did after a while, but it, you know, but being doing that broke Cheech and I up. Had we kept Lou or a guy like Lou, you know, we would have still broken up because we could never have done it.
Well, it's funny you should say Altman, because I was going to ask if he was an influence, because maybe my favorite scene in any of your movies is in next movie, the welfare office scene. Because yeah. There's like 10 things going on at once.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw somebody do a reaction video. He couldn't follow it.
Yeah.
There's like, there's something going on in the foreground, something going on in the background. You got,
yeah.
Teacher's trying to get with Donna.
That was mine. That came all out of me. That was, I will take credit for that whole scene.
It's a brilliant scene. And
yeah. Well, they're friends. The guy, the junkie with the cigarette was really, he was a junkie. He was Lenny Bruce's brother, father-in-law. He had married Sally Marr, Lenny's mother.
Really?
And Tony Vaccara, he's a junkie nodding off.
Oh, he's great.
And the old guy, he's an old cowboy actor, you know, with the no teeth. He that was his thing. Michael Winslow was a comedian from San Francisco the casting office, they found him. They said, you could check out this guy. He's crazy. And so then I saw a little bit of his act, so he's in the scene, and then Cheech and Evelyn making out, and then me, and all I had to do was just watch him, just look around. It was an incredible. Yeah, that scene is being taught in film school. It goes I think it's an 11-minute scene without a cut. It was incredible. Yeah, because I had it all going. But see, that's my improv training, you see.
Right.
Because you have a stage, and so you get all these different things going at the same time, you see. And so the eye gets to just wander back and forth. And because we are men, like you see the kids with their phones and that now, you know, they can multitask. Like, they have to. I mean, their brains are developed that way. And so when I did that scene, I mean, that's what that blew so many minds in the movie people, you know.
Right. And very, very Altman-esque, because he did stuff like that too.
Yeah.
Not quite like that.
Yeah, that was my inspiration. Robert Altman in that whole genre. The movie actor, the movie director that I was, Terry Malick. Terry Malick.
Right.
Yeah, that's my all-time. He's the guy I really look at. I called him, you know, for Up in Smoke.
Oh, really?
And I wanted, because we're looking for a director. And so I give Terry Malick a call, and he says, direct it yourself. And then I didn't take his advice until I started directing movies myself, because, you know, like Up in Smoke, I had Lou Adler. And then after that, it was all me, you know. So I listened to Terry Malick, you know.
I'm trying to picture a Terrence Malick version of Up in Smoke. Blow my mind.
No, could only be a Tommy Chong version.
I was going to say.
You know, there's no, that's what made it so special, you know, because I really was embedded with the troops. I was, you know, with the black culture with Motown. And then I was with Cheech. I got into the Chicano culture. Mm-hmm. And that was the culture that I wanted to highlight, you know, because up to then it was always white guys or New York Jewish guys doing their version of the ghetto, their version of the Chicanos, and they're always, you know, cartel guys or gang members, you know, hard ass. But I wanted to show that lowrider, the guy that was only interested in his car, you know, that he didn't even park on his property, you know. I mean, that the opening before the credits with Cheech and I, it was so classic because Cheech's cousin Louis helped write the my scene, you know, with the dad, you know, Anthony Stoner. That was
Cheech's cousin. That was your name.
Cousin. Yeah, Anthony Stoner. And Cheech's cousin Louis wrote that. And that was one of the, we did some writing, you know, in the beginning. And then once we got the thing going, then we just wrote as we went, you know, including the ending.
Right. And which is great. But you guys broke a lot of racial taboos for the better. Like, yeah, you say, you guys on purpose. Were the first ones.
On purpose. It was, I visually see when I was a kid, like I got a Nazi tattoo on my arm because when I was a kid, our house was kind of used. We took in boarders. And when I was about 15, I come across this guy just got out of jail, needed a place to stay. And so he came and stayed with us and turned out that he was like a white nationalist skinhead type, you know, with tattoos on all his hands, fingers, chest, everything. And he gave me a white supremacy tattoo on my arm, which I didn't know it was a white supremacy tattoo.
Even though you're not completely white. You're half Chinese.
I know. It was like a joke, you know. And that's why no one suspected anything. It wasn't until I was on a talk show with some bikers, and the guy goes, "Hey, that's a white supremacy tattoo you got." I said, "Really? Oh shit!"
That would be such a shock. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah,
but I got to be honest. When I was a kid, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that said this to you, I thought you both were Mexican.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I get that all the time.
Yeah,
I was all the time. But you know, the weird thing is I was in Tijuana or Mazatlan near Tijuana, and I was trying to rent a car. And when the car guy goes, "Your name is Chong? Hey, just a minute. Come here. I want you to meet someone." And he calls a Chinese guy in. And he's Chinese, and his name is Chong. And he's got dark glasses on, but he sounds like Cheech. "Hey, what's going on, man?
Hey, it's Chong.
Yo, man, my name is Chong, too. Yeah. Hey, you're Chong. Yeah, I'm Chong, man. Yeah."
And that's so great.
He says, "Excuse the dark glasses, but I got in a fight last night," and he takes his glasses off. He's got two black eyes. Yeah. So it was weird, you know, because the culture has intermingled, you know, and that's really what Cheech and I brought out in Up in Smoke, you see, because we introduced all these different ghetto trips, but we're all joined together with music and weed in order to
have universal language.
Well, in order to have music, you need weed. And so we found the weed, then we got our music, you see, and that's what unites the world. And that's what we have to shoot for now, you know, and find a way. And we've got our Zoom calls and everything, and we can do this.
It's amazing that you know, I don't even know, because I was it's before my time, but I can only imagine how revolutionary it was in 1978 to have a movie starring a Mexican and a half Chinese guy, and no big deal,
breaking box office records, and it was no big deal, and saving industries like the drive-in movie theater. We met their association, and they all came up and thanked us and gave us a plaque, actually, because we saved that industry, because they had Cheech and Chong weekends, and they would be packed. And they're seeing the same movie over and over again.
And there's a big cloud over the drive-in. And Up in Smoke
Festival. Yeah, and it's at a drive-in, and so everybody's smoking and everything. And so we saved the industry. We saved the drive-in movie industry. I love drive-in movies.
Speaking of drive-ins, how did you do the in Los Cochinos? You have that bit where you sneak a bunch of people in the truck in a drive-in. How did you make those sounds with the?
Oh yeah,
he's peeing on the trunk and they're banging on the trunk. How did you do that?
We got our ways, you know. We
did you pee on a trunk or
there's secrets. They're actually trade secrets. We can't divulge them, because Cheech and I, we did all the sound effects in a little mix down room, and we had an engineer. That's all we needed, an engineer, and Cheech and Chong in a mix down room, and then we just partied the whole time, you know. And then what happened? You know, usually you do a project and you're done, you know, relax, you know, and think about another. But no, when you do a hit record, next thing you know, the record company's like, what else you got? You know, right. When can we have the next one? And then the next one, and the next one. Next thing we did, what, 8, 9 albums, man. And they were chasing us around the country. You know, Lewis and Cruz out to Chicago or to Montreal. You know, we're working a club and we go, oh, we have to record an album while we're doing the club. Wow. And we did them. We did it. We had so much fun, man.
Well, I'm sure.
Yeah, there was no labor involved. It was all about getting high and meeting great people and just laughing and having a great time, you know.
I listen to them on vinyl now. You put on the headphones. When you put on the headphones on a Cheech and Chong record, it's like a Pink Floyd record. Like, things are just going all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
And the headphones. Yeah.
Well, we did it purposely, you know, and I think we inspired a lot of people, you know, a lot of the recording artists, because we were first, you know, we were out there a long time. And so I can see a lot of artists. Well, that's why I was on a couple of Dr. Dre albums, you know, and he didn't really agree with my politics, but he sure liked my popularity, you know. And so
he liked your weed too, I'm sure.
We never really got high. You know, Dr. Dre and I were very businesslike. You know, I'd come into the studio, he'd tell me what he wanted, you know, and I would do it. And that was it. You know, I never really got to meet him one day.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. He was very businesslike.
And I was in a movie. I was in a movie with him too. Him and Snoop. I was in The Wash.
The Wash?
Yeah. And again, you know, I did the scene with him, and see you later, you know. Wasn't even a see you later. It was kind of a, I guess, you know, cultural thing, I guess, you know. I don't know how to.
He's too big for Tommy Chong? What's the matter with him?
No.
Dr. Dre was here right now, I would straighten him out for you.
No, no reason to. No, okay. No, because they're already straight, you know.
Okay.
Is that what it is? He got $50 million, but how much did he get for his headphones?
Oh, there's more than $50 million. I think he's a billionaire now.
Beyond that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just donated $10 million to the Compton High School. So he's very cool on that side. No, I'm talking about, you know, personal. You know, we never cooked it up. Snoop and I are a little tighter, you know.
Right.
But I understand those guys because I really represent, like my dad. You know,
right.
I'm not black, you know, and I represent a lot of people that have, you know, that Southern white supremacy tattoo, that attitude, you know. There's a lot of people. I grew up in that neighborhood, you know,
right.
And in fact, because I was mixed, we were the ones that were considered the N-word, you know,
sure.
of the neighborhood. Sure. Yeah, it was us. And so I understood that whole dynamic, that headspace, you know.
Well, you're racially ambiguous too, so I'm sure you got called all sorts of things.
Well, not really, because my brother was a hockey player, very tough. And he was older, he's three years older. So anybody said anything to me, or even looked cross-eyed at me, they got hurt, you know, immediately. And my brother had respect of all the tough guys. He was a tough guy. Yeah. No, we had no problem on the physical side of it. It was more strength, like it is today, the weakling, you know, the meek and the strong, you know, the intellects, you know, the nerds, you know, they're cowering. And then you got the jocks, they're looking for things to hurt themselves with.
Right. You know? Well, things are kind of flipped. So the nerds are like the bullies now, and the jocks are kind of cowering. But Dr. Dre, I'm going to let you off with a warning because you've been so charitable, but let me ask you this. I've got a weird question about my favorite movie of yours, which is Nice Dreams. I, for some reason, that movie really clicked with me. I think that might have been the first one I saw, but it's from Jason McNeil, and he said the first time he saw martial arts legend Jeff Ahmada was in Cheech and Chong's Nice Dream. He had the role as the waiter, and he pulls out a butterfly knife and opens the wine at the table. So, and you went, whoa, and how did that come about? How did you meet him?
He wanted a role in the movie, and he showed me the trick with the knife, and so I wrote him in. I said, okay, you'll be the waiter.
How'd you meet him?
Casting, you know, he was trying to get into movies, you know, and they would come up. I love, that's why I love the movie industry. You meet all these people, they want to work, you know, and he came up through casting. Any other questions?
No, but apparently the butterfly knife was new to the West.
Yeah, it was brand new. And we should, I had trippy things in the movies all throughout.
Right.
You know, that was my way of, improv movies. You know?
Nice Dreams is probably the trippiest movie that you've done. It's got that ending with Michael Winslow doing Jimi Hendrix, and it trips you out every time.
And, which one?
Nice Dreams? Yeah.
Nice Dreams. Is that the lizard?
You guys are in a psych ward, and Sandra Bernhardt is one of the patients, and they got a guy barking like a chicken, and it's another one. There's like 10 things happening at the same time.
Yeah. Wouldn't
and you Pee Wee Herman's in there. And...
Hamburger Man.
Stacy Keach turns into a lizard. And
That was a trip. Well, you know what happened? We come down the props department had a iguana with a joint smoking, remember? So I had to pay that off somehow, you know, because that's what you want to do with a movie. You get something going, but you got to pay it off, you know. And so I never really had an ending for Stacy being a stoner the way he was, an upper, you know, or a mind blower. I wanted a mind blowing ending. And so I turned him into a lizard. That was great, huh? His tongue reaching out.
He's got the tail in the backseat, and it's a scene with you two, just Paul, Pee Wee Herman, and Stacy Keach in the car as a lizard. and Nicole, I don't know if you know this. Go ahead if you have a question. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was going to ask a question, but go ahead.
Your question first, and now I've got a question.
Well, I was inspired by your question. Is there one of your projects that you're the most proud of? Like, you probably get asked that a lot, but I'm just curious what you feel is your best work that you...
Well, I there's a little bit in everything. I love them all. They're like my kids. They're all separate. You know, I love them each for what they are. You know, everyone. I don't have a bad feeling for any of them. I had all good feelings. You know, something good came out of every one of them. You know, and No. I was kind of disappointed with Cheech in a way, you know, but after giving it a lot of thought, I realized that it was inevitable. You know, it was time to move on. I had said everything with Cheech and Chong that you could say, you know, without all of a sudden repeating yourself. And, you know, that's kind of like, you know, we could do something now, and I intend to. You know, we got a documentary coming out of us, and I intend it. But no, you know, things happen the way they happen. You know, that's why they're so good. You film them, and then you got them. You got them forever. You know.
Nice.
And what was it like performing with Cheech for the first time in 20 plus years in front of a huge adoring crowd?
It's like learning how to eat ice cream.
It's all instinct.
It's so natural. It's like it was yesterday. You know, there was no time because my life never changed. It was just that I was on stage by myself for about 20 years.
Right.
No, with my wife, with Shelby. Shelby and I started. And then when Cheech joined, you know, one of the stipulations that I had with my wife is that she's part of the act, or, you know, and that's it. And she became a big part of the act, and she still is, you know. Yeah.
And she apparently doesn't age. She looks fantastic, and she's very incredible. Funny.
She's incredible. She's funny. She's charming. She's ditzy. She's got a natural nuttiness about her that it's like, wow, I wish I had filmed that. You know, she's amazing.
How'd you meet her?
She was my neighbor, which I didn't know. I was married to Maxine, happily married, pretty recently married. Then we were given a nightclub, and it was a steakhouse, and I turned it into an after-hours club. And we had it for like 5-7 years. It was great, but in the beginning, we were losing money. In fact, we were getting, nobody came in. It was just, it was hopeless, looked pretty bad. And then, so we had an outside gig. We played a place called the Teen Fair. Well, first of all, we played a place on the beach. And that's when I first saw her. She came off the beach. I was outside and I saw her come off the beach with her little brother holding his hand, and he walked up toward me and past me. And that's when I first saw her. And I swear to God, I've never seen anything more beautiful in my life. She was so gorgeous. And because she had sort of like a sneer, you know, on her face, like, but it was natural. It was just the way her mouth went. But I loved that, oh, who are you, that look. And so then that night we were on stage playing, and again, she's with her sister now and her brother, and she comes up to the stage, and she wanted to talk to the singer because her and her sister were into black guys at the moment. And I jumped right in front of the singer and said, hi. And she said, do you know Walking the Dog? And I said, yeah. She said, well, play it. And when she said it, I just, oh my God, I fell in love with her. I fell in love with her. And so I turned to the band. I said, they said, what does she want? I said, she wants Walking the Dog. We knew it. So we played the hell out of it. I turned around and she was gone.
Oh, no.
She had to walk a dog.
At the end of the song, I look up, she's gone. No insight. And so then now, a week or so later, we're playing at a teen fair. Well, her and her sister, no kid this time, they come up after the gig and they start making the conversation. Now this time, she's talking to me. At least she's not talking, but she's kind of, I'm the guy that was walking the dog. She saw the interest. You know, she's like a fisherman. She saw I took the bait, so she's going to reel me in. So next thing you know, we're going to give them a ride to another nightclub. Not our nightclub, but another nightclub where everybody, all the hip people go. And so she gets in the back seat. I'm in the back seat. And our band uniform at the time, we were sort of like running out of ideas and money. So we had Dickies underneath the shirts. You know what a Dickie is? The turtleneck. And so we get in the car together. I'm in the back seat. She's in the back seat. And she's looking out the window. And she says, take off that Dickie. And I looked at her. I said, excuse me? And she goes, take off that Dickie. Oh, I said, oh, okay. So I took it off. And she said, now get me some popcorn. I fell so in love with her. Yes, ma'am. I ran.
And you've been giving her popcorn ever since.
I ran and got her popcorn and brought it back. And then she said, okay, now drop us up to Harlem Knocker, the other club. And Floyd, the drummer, was in the car, and Tommy. And we drive, and Wes, so we drive down to the Harlem Nocturne, drop off the girls, go to our club, and about an hour later, I hear a big commotion at the door. We got no one in the club, and I look, and it's Shelby and her sister, and a shitload of guys the whole other club. What happened was
she pulled that move.
No, they wouldn't let her in the other club. I think she was too young or something. And so she said, oh, well, I know a club we can get into. And so she literally Pied Piper'd the whole crowd down to our club. And our club stayed full every night from that moment on. It was packed to the rafters. And it was all because of Shelby. And so we became friends. And then after a while, we became more than friends. And then after a while, we became parents. And then after another while, we became lovers. And then...
Well, you were lovers before parents, right?
Obviously.
Okay. Yeah, I was getting confused for a second there.
Yeah. And we've been together ever since.
Well, tell Shelby, I know Nicole, after we interviewed you last time, she went on her Instagram page, is like, Tommy's wife is awesome. And I've seen Far Out Man and Things Are Tough All Over and other things she's been in. And I've seen her do stand-up, and we're big fans.
Oh, yeah, she is amazing. And her painting, oh, my God, her painting is through the roof, seriously. Yeah, she's gifted. She's very gifted. And we went on a painting expedition in last week to Umbria, Italy, and where we took lessons with her teacher, and I took photographs, and I had a lesson, but she's really good, very talented, very beautiful. She's all that, and I'm very jealous, and that makes it all work.
It's so nice to see your eyes twinkle when you talk about her.
Oh yeah, she's my love. She's my love. I can't wait. I did something that I'm not supposed to do today. I had the dog trimmed. I had the poodle trimmed, and under explicit warning, don't get him trimmed. And I did. So I'm waiting for her to come home to hear the reaction. Should be interesting.
Well, I don't hold you up too long. I do have a couple more questions, if it's okay. Sure. We appreciate your time, and you've always been generous. And everybody's like, "What's this like? What's it like to talk to Tommy Chong?" And I'm like, "He's the coolest. He's so nice." And you know, obviously because you're medicated, but that you are very nice. But Half Baked. Nicole will kill me, but I just saw it for the first time the other night. I've never seen it.
Kill you, but I hope it was a good experience.
It was, but I was surprised that you're in a movie about weed, and you didn't smoke weed in the movie. Play a guy in prison.
I played Nasty Nate. Nasty Nate.
The squirrel guy.
Yeah. Squirrel Master. The weird thing is, right after that movie, I went to jail, and I used to feed squirrels. If anything, I could have had a squirrel pet if I wanted, because we used to go feed the ground squirrels, because the food was so bad in prison that the squirrels, they're the ones that got fat, you know. We'd feed them, but
Half Baked. You're the squirrel master in real life.
I ended up being, I'm telling you, everything's ordained, you know. There were so many signs of me going to jail. I had a guy write a script. He was a script writer my daughter found. And then I said, well, write a, you know, script, a Cheech and Chong script. And he wrote about bongs being busted and doing time in prison. And that was the last thing. I mean, it was so ordained that I was going to go down. That
you put it out in the universe. And
it was out there.
But I've said this last time, but I really want to reiterate. I think, and I really, it's so awful, you know, that you had to go to jail. And I recommend everybody watch the documentary, AKA Tommy Chong, which apparently the government confiscated a bunch of DVDs of, but, and also read your book, I Chong. But you going to jail, I think, has led to the widespread legalization of marijuana, because it was so ridiculous.
Absolutely. It was the final straw, you know. Because there's no explanation for it, especially when they found out that there were no mass weapons of mass destruction. And yet Tommy Chong went to jail for bongs, you see. because that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to create a false narrative, you know, that the hippie dope movement was funding terrorism.
Right.
That's what they were trying to push at the time. And, you know, because Bush was very Putin-like, you know, at the time. And as it turned out, he went to war, you know, just like Putin did, you know.
People forget how bad Bush was. But, you know, so, yeah, I think you got thrown in jail for somebody selling bombs with your name and not even you.
Well, they wanted a name, you know, to be honest with you, they wanted a celebrity. You know, they didn't want some pot, you know, some glass blower, you know, like Jason Harris. They didn't want him. You know, they wanted Tommy Chong because Tommy Chong has a name. And like in the indictment, they even said that I made fun of law enforcement agencies in my movie. That was in the indictment.
Well, that's technically true, but still.
But since
that's not a crime, that's true. But
since when is it against the Constitution that you can't make fun of law enforcement? You know,
it's so ridiculous that
you know. No, it was everything was wrong about it, but the reason was that it martyred, brought the attention to me. It's much like this leaked document from the Supreme Court, you know, that they're going to overturn Roe. It's almost like they're going to ruin the GOP, you know, because right. That's what's going to happen, you know, when you put the entire woman, except for the nutcases against you, you know, you're going to lose, dude.
And now, you know, I think you deserve a lot of credits, you know, and for your sacrifice. But because of you, there's dispensaries on every corner.
Absolutely.
As there should be. Why not?
And you can grow in your privacy of your own home. You can, you know, you can do it. The only thing we can't do yet, and you know what? This is even going to make cryptocurrency even bigger, because it looks like the cryptocurrency is the only way we're going to be able to deal with our cash from the marijuana stores, you know. And so if we work it righteously, which it will be worked, then the currency, you know, marijuana is going to be able to generate its own currency. In effect, you know, like everything else does, you know, corn, wheat, barley, you know,
right. The commodities market. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what is going to happen. And Cheech and Chong are going public and we have a delivery service and we have you know, all sorts of our own brands, you know, Cheech has his brand. I got my brand. And then we have brands together and then we got CBD and we got it all, you know, gummies, we got everything. And so it's just a matter of time before you know, we get it all done, and we're going to get it all done. It's happening.
Great. That's great. The other question I had, and a lot of people don't even know you're from Cheech and Chong. They know you're from That 70s Show, and I know they're doing a reboot of That 70s Show called That 90s Show. Are you involved in that?
Yes, I am, actually. They give me a call, and I did my part. It's the kids, the grandkids. It's Red and Kitty and the grandkids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I don't know what the grandkids did, but I got a good idea. And, it's going to be great.
I'm glad they put you in there. They should.
Yeah. I mean, they never give me any instructions, so I don't know if I'm supposed to be talking about it or not. I really don't give a shit, to tell you the truth. You know, I've got a big mouth. That's what I'm known for. That's why people want me on their podcast, because they
exactly.
do talk. You know?
Well, that's a Dark Mark Show exclusive. Tommy Chong will be in That 90s Show.
Yeah. Which, Leo. I'm back as Leo.
Leo's back on That 90s Show. And unless Nicole has another question, I have just one last question. What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen or you've ever smoked that's been turned into a bomb?
We're just seeing that every smoke's been turned into a bong.
Because I've seen bongs out of apples, bongs out of beer cans.
I was going to say a dildo, but I don't want to admit to having a penis anywhere near my mouth. God, I don't know.
With dildo. I think that's a good. Because I saw the.
I didn't realize until after.
No, I was just watching, and I had this VHS when I was a kid, the Tommy Chong roast, and you pulled out a dildo on the Tommy Chong roast. Playboy in the 80s was trying to get into the roast thing, like 20 years before.
Right,
time.
Right. Now, what did I do? Oh, was that Cheech and I doing Queer Wars or something?
No. It was just you. It was a roast of you. Cheech wasn't involved. Marsha Warfield, Dick Shawn, Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah. Jerry Seinfeld, yeah.
It was like Playboy tried
and,
to do like...
And a dildo came out?
Yeah, you came out and you said something because Marsha Warfield, who's great, who I've gotten to know, and it was wonderful. She said that she fucked you, and you're like, oh, yeah, I fucked you. And then you brought out like this dildo. And Dick Shawn vomited on stage, so you put the dildo next to the vomit. It was a whole.
Oh.
It's on YouTube. You got to check that out again. It's hilarious.
You know, I have a big memory of that bit. What I do remember is that Seinfeld. I never met Seinfeld. He never came back. Never said hello. Never mentioned my name on the show even.
He's an awful roaster. I got to be honest. He's not a like he did a couple like Cheech and Chong. Their movies have such great plots. And then he's like, hey. You ever lose a sock in the laundry? And you're like, oh, yeah, come on. But,
A guy in Hartford, a gangster, he had a nightclub he opened. He had me booked there, and so he opened it up. There's mail all over the floor. Obviously, the feds had closed him down, and he's opening it up to have the Tommy Chong night.
Right.
And he said he didn't like Seinfeld either. He said he did it, but he said, ever get something in your tooth and you can't get it out?
Yeah.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah, this roast was like 20 years before its time. Like, I guess Playboy TV was trying to do roasts.
Well, David Steinberg was he directed it or produced it,
right.
David Steinberg.
Right.
Yeah, that he got me. Well, what happened? I did a Milton Berle roast for him. And okay. My bit with Milton was that, he was so well hung that when a fire broke out, someone came up and broke Milton's glasses and unzipped his penis and pulled it down, ran down two flights of stairs and put out the fire, you know. And Seinberg loved that. And so next thing I know, they're roasting Tommy Chong. But I don't remember the dildo. I don't remember that.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. But you busted out a dildo, and I can't remember what the whole bit was. But you're like, I went to a sex shop to get this. And I'm not sure.
God, I got to check it out.
Yeah, there was a video store out by my house, and they were getting rid of VHSs for DVDs. And that's one of the VHSs I had. And I used to laugh at that when I was like,
I love that. It was a fire sale, huh?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think I got Nice Dreams and a couple others too.
The throwaway bin. Yeah, I remember those. Yeah.
Yes. The Tommy Chong roast was like a big Playboy Tommy Chong roast. And then you were also roasted by Greg Giraldo, probably one of the last roasts he did.
Cheech and I were roasted.
Yeah, that was on TNT, and that was a real roast.
What did he die of?
It was there's different accounts. Apparently, it was he died of he was overdosed on some prescription drugs, I think.
Fentanyl or something.
I'm not sure. I think he had a medical condition, and he just missed. They say he just he didn't do the right dosage, which I don't know because he was in recovery, so I'm not sure. But he was great. What a great comedian.
Yeah. Well, all those guys, man.
I hasten to say, in my opinion, Greg Giraldo is funnier than Jerry Seinfeld, but, what am I going to say? That's my personal opinion. Especially as a roaster.
Yeah. You know the guy that really cracked me up is Bobcat Goldthwait?
Oh, he's great.
How do you like Bobcat?
I love Bobcat, and it's funny you should mention that because Jerry Seinfeld and Bobcat Goldthwait. Jerry Seinfeld can't stand Bobcat Goldthwait. He did the comedians in cars drinking coffee and talk shit about Bobcat Goldthwait, and they bleep Bobcat Goldthwait's name out of it. And Bobcat's he's like, I didn't like him then, but I haven't seen him in 100 years. I could care less about Jerry Seinfeld. I don't know why he keeps bringing it up. So Jerry Seinfeld's like,
said that.
Yeah. And Jerry Seinfeld on the show is like, he always thought he was cool, but his act was terrible. Who cares if you're cool if you got the jokes? And it's like, and the woman that he's got on the show is friends with Bobcat. She's like, I like him. And so he's like, he sucks. He actually said he sucks on the show, which is weird.
Wow. Yeah. Bobcat got really mad at me one time.
What happened?
Well, Shelby and I were working the East Coast, and we just got out of New Jersey, where Dice Clay's crowd, you know, and mm-hmm. they really give Shelby a bad time. You know, she went out, and they purposely wouldn't laugh at any of her jokes. They were just really mean, and. Mm-hmm. And so when she walked off stage, I said, I thought, you know, that she'd be devastated, but she wasn't at all. And I said, so how was it? You know, I knew how it was. And she said, fuck them. And I said, okay, all right. She's a comedian. She's real. And then a couple of weeks later, we're in Vegas, I guess, at some comedy club there, and Bobcat's on the bill. Well, Bobcat had just broken up with his wife, was in it, and he had a girlfriend on the road with him or something anyway. Mm-hmm. And so Shelby, because she's opened the show, she mentioned something about it, you know, but oh yeah, dump the wife, you know, that thing. And Bobcat fucking died, man. He can run into the dressing room. He's your wife's talking about me. And I laugh, and I said, but you know, Bobcat, I don't know, this is a news flash, but you're a comedian. She's a comedian. That's what we do. We talk about each other, you know. And he cried like a baby. It was funny. And he kept crying after she was finished. She had no idea. She was just glad the bit went over, you know, it was.
Well, he was going through a divorce, and unlike you, he didn't have Selby Chong waiting for him after the divorce. So I give him a little slack on that. one more question, and I really appreciate you sticking with us, and we've always done a lot of these long shows, and I appreciate it. Why are Canadians so funny?
Funny involves two things. It involves truth and intelligence. And the Canadians, or anybody funny, is they've got those two qualities going for themselves. They know the truth, and they're intelligent enough to twist it or make it so funny that you lessen any negative impact. That's how you disarm anybody or anything or any situation. If you find the humor in it, you can disarm anything. You know, you can keep yourself from getting killed if you can mm-hmm. find the humor in it. And and that's why the Canadians, plus in Canada, it's a no bullshit country. You know, down mm-hmm. here, you can pretend a lot. You know, in New York, you can pretend a lot. But up in Canada, you don't pretend. You know, everything is real. And your stupidity is real, too. You know, if you are, you know, whatever, if you're stuck there, that's who you are. And, you know, like a Guy Lombardo orchestra, you know, there's a lot of musicians on that orchestra that could play the fuck out of their instruments. But that's where they made the money. You know, that's where the food trough was. And Canadians, for the most part, were realists. You know, if we don't do certain things, we don't get certain things, you know. You know, we have to go out and get it. You know, no one's going to sit, knock on your door and say, hey, Dan Aykroyd, hey, do you want a job doing this or that? No, you're going to auditions. You're going to open mic nights. You're doing whatever the fuck you can do to make it. And right. Canadians, you know, hey, we invented hockey. That's how tough we are.
There you go. If you want a scooter, you got to work for it.
That's it.
Tommy, as always, it's been a delight. You are the best. You are still my comedy hero, and just I can't say enough for you. You've just been so gracious with your time and such a nice, real person. I guess that's Canadian in you. If you have anything you want to promote, and I encourage everybody to go to TommyChong.com, all sorts of things going on. Belated Mother's Day gifts and Father's Day gifts and birthday gifts, anything for anybody. So promote away, whatever you got going on.
Just whatever you find, whatever you're looking for with Tommy Chong on it, you know. I stand behind everything, and if it's making money, I really push the shit out of it, you know. So whatever makes anybody feel
good, that's what
I
want to do.
I just want to make everybody feel good. If you get my CBD, it'll make you feel good. If you do any of my videos, it'll make you feel good. So I'm a feel-good guy.
You absolutely are. And Nicole, tell everybody how they can find you on social media and about your new poetry book.
Well, you can find me at Nicole Six Books on Instagram, Nicole H Six on Facebook, and then go to lulu.com, lulu.com, and search Nicole Six, and you'll find my latest book.
Okay, bye.
And we're gonna send you a copy, Tommy. I'm Goth Comedian on all social media. Thanks a lot. You have a wonderful night. Everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.